Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 204 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we're going to be diving into part two of the conversation that I've been having with Dr. Carrie Jones on whether licorice and other adaptogens are appropriate or contraindicated for those struggling with cortisol issues, especially those going through topical steroid withdrawal. If you have not listened to episode 203, head back there and start with that episode because that is part one of this conversation. I'm excited because many of the questions that part one generated are answered in this episode. So if you had lingering questions and you're wondering about, for example, can you use licorice root topically and what will happen when you use it? Is it bad? Does it act as a steroid on the skin? We're going to talk about that today and a bunch more about other adaptogens that I have seen described online in forums as being natural steroids, things like ashwagandha and rhodiola. And one final reminder about today's conversation. This is not meant to be a recommendation for or against using any of these natural botanicals in your journey. It is not for us to make that decision. Ultimately, you need to make informed decisions. And the whole point of this was to create something that was based on science and research to provide you as much information as possible so that you can make the best, most informed decision for yourself. And whether you feel comfortable using any of these or you ultimately choose not to, it's entirely up to you. There's no judgment around that. I just wanted to provide you the ability to make the best informed decision for yourself. So let's dive into today's part two of the conversation with Dr. Carrie Jones. So for somebody who, say, let's give an example here of someone going through withdrawal, they're not on any topical steroids anymore, no more steroid exposure. They start doing low dose type licorice, and then they feel better, and then they stop it, and all this, and they almost have a flare, like a crash. Is that because there's nothing there now to prevent that sort of like deactivation of the cortisol, or is that literally like a steroid rebound thing that's happening?
I don't think it's a steroid rebound. What I would guess is that it's like me as an example. If you don't work to address the cause, and in that case, it's to get the brain and the adrenals to come back online again. And when you go to the adrenals, we're like all the way down in the mitochondria. And so if you're just using licorice as a crutch because you read about it or you're listening right now and you're like, heck yeah, Amazon licorice. But you don't address the brain stuff, the mitochondrial stuff to get those two talking so that you can make your own cortisol again and not necessarily need the licorice. Then yes, if you do licorice and you're feeling good and you stop it, and if you're feeling better and burning yourself out, right? So you have been feeling like crap and you take some licorice and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm starting to feel better. I have more energy. I'm back in my body again. Let me just go ahead and push it. Let me just go spend all the money in my bank account. And now you're in a negative again. And then if you stop the licorice, you're in more of a negative. And so it's being very mindful. Licorice is a great Band-Aid. It's a great crutch. But you also have to make sure that you don't take your newfound energy and burn it all up, so to speak, and that you are also working to improve the brain connection down to the adrenals, specifically the mitochondria, so that you're making your own cortisol and can do it yourself. That's the ultimate goal, that you can do it yourself.
So what I'm hearing, because I think this is important, I want to kind of like boil it down to something simple too that people can. So licorice can, in some instances, be a Band-Aid, right? So you gave us the example of your personal experience. But in some people, it might actually be a helpful stepping stone. It doesn't mean that it just delays. If you're doing all the other things and you are really suffering, it could possibly be helpful to, you know, especially if I have clients who cannot sleep, their hair is falling out, they have tons of
they're in a ton of pain. Their skin is super bright red. I think I personally am of the feeling every person should make an educated decision of what's best for them. And if the place that you're in is not, this is just not good, you cannot be here, this might be helpful to get you to a more comfortable
place. Yeah. Yeah. To and also, for some people, they need that boost to do the things to feel better. And sometimes I would have patients that were so depleted on a scale of 0 to 10, they were down at like 1. You know, I'm asking them to do some things to make some changes in their life to help. And they're like, Carrie, I literally can't. I'm like, okay, let's give you some, a boost, right? Let's get you some cortisol. Let's help your body keep some cortisol active longer so that you go from a 1 to maybe a 5. And that will then you can start doing some of the gentler things that either are around, you know, I don't know, detox or lifestyle or, you know, whatever habits you're trying to implement just to give you the oomph. Because some people, their head is underwater and I just need to get it above water so they can move forward.
Yeah. I wanted to also point out too that there can be other inhibitors of 11-beta-HSD2. I saw some of your slides. I found some slides. Things like phthalates, organotins, perifluorinated substances. So it sounds like
the bad things.
Yeah. So some very bad environmental exposures can also do the same thing in kind of like inhibiting this enzyme that we're talking about.
Usually we see that, I'll be honest, usually we see that a lot more in the people who have higher free cortisol. So it's not like I have low cortisol, so I'm going to start drinking out of plastic because it'll raise my cortisol. Don't do that. Don't, you know, like, let's be smart about this. But but what I can see is when somebody has high cortisol, we can't, like, they're doing all the things. They're resting, relaxing, self-caring, supplementing, what have you, but come to find out, you know, they do use a lot of plastic or have a history or they've got a history of exposure depending where they grew up or, you know, whatever it is, then that could be the reason they have higher higher cortisol. Yeah.
Okay. And
But for deactivating, I believe it's Skullcap. I believe Skullcap is an inhibitor. So if you have high cortisol, so just as an FYI people, I believe Skullcap can bring it down. So if you're doing, like, if you can't sleep and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm taking Skullcap. Again, it's dose and person dependent, and it's one study that I found. And then a part of Magnolia, it's the active ingredient in Magnolia is called a Hinokiol with an H, Hinokiol. And Hinokiol, great for anxiety, great for sleep. You will see it all over the interwebs. But one of the big ways that it works is it reduces cortisol. If you already have reduced cortisol, might not be the best thing.
and I wanted to point out too, I found some interesting research showing that like grapefruit juice can actually inhibit, they didn't specify whether it was the HSD1 or HSD2. I mean, there's other things, and like curcumin can be inhibitory for HSD1. So it's not just licorice. This is complicated. This is a lot of biochemistry. Yeah. It's not as simple as just saying, oh, well, I read this thing online or I read somebody's experience. I mean, there is a lot of science behind this. And I think you would even say that we're still learning.
We're still learning. And a lot of studies aren't in human, right? Yeah. They're in cells in a petri dish. Yep. They're in a mouse. They're in, you know, a fish, which is a helpful, like, initial, but, It's the human that doesn't, you know, mice doesn't always trans over into human, right? Fish doesn't always sell in a petri dish is great, but it's very controlled environment. Mm-hmm. It's very sterile. And then you put it in an interacting human in the world and who is not sterile and it, you know, we could get very different results.
Yeah.
So if somebody's listening to this and thinking, oh my gosh, I take curcumin, should I stop? Not necessarily, you know, we don't fully. No, we know a lot about licorice. There's a lot of research on licorice and how it can increase cortisol. But licorice does not act like prednisone. It does not go in and suppress the brain communication down to the adrenals.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. It doesn't suppress that communication. Mm-mm. It acts in a very different way. Any thoughts on taking it or like is there impacts to this in the similar fashion on using it topically? Like, I'll give you guys all one example because I got this question a few times. I was looking around on the interwebs to see if I could find any research. And there was one study I found. It was a placebo-controlled double-blind study from 2019 using, so this was interesting. It was using UV light therapy combined with a cream that included gentian root, licorice root, and willow bark extract. And they found it to be as effective as 1% hydrocortisone. And I'm like, yeah, but what did what? Nobody knows. Yeah. There's too many muddy factors there. We can't just point toward the licorice root as being the needle mover.
Licorice root is a whole plant. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about cortisol, just cortisol, because that's the theme of today. But as a whole plant, licorice has been used, like I said, for centuries and centuries and centuries. I mean, it's definitely very healing and helpful and anti-inflammatory as an entire plant down to the root. The root is what we use the most, right? I mean, heck, it's a flavoring, you know, like, you know, people either love licorice or they hate it. And so it's good for cough. It's a good demulcent. It's, you know, it's good for illness. It's been used for a lot of things, which is why herbalists tend to really like it and use it as a harmonizer. And so I, as a doctor, I'm careful. If I'm giving it as a supplement, if it is a higher dose of blood pressure and potassium, but you will see, a lot of people will probably go and look at their sleepy time tea and go, oh my gosh, I didn't realize there was a little bit of cortisol in here, or cortisol, licorice. Or they'll look at their like stress relief tea and they'll like, oh my gosh, licorice is the last ingredient. Because herbalists like it, because it can, it's a, it a tiny bit, it's a nice harmonizer. And so as a topical cream, it can definitely be anti-inflammatory. Not, it doesn't work like topical, like hydrocortisone. You know, it's not like you're applying, it's not same. We're not apples to apples here. It's definitely a, it's like definitely a botanical route. Yeah. So affecting it like hydrocortisone is different than 100% acting like hydrocortisone.
So this brought up another question, and this is sort of an aside. So in this case where somebody, let's just say someone is nervous with licorice. Would maybe a glandular adrenal support be possibly helpful in this type of situation?
And I will give the caveat. So first of all, a glandular comes from an animal. And so, and they take the, like, you'll hear of thyroid glandular, you'll hear of ovarian glandulars. So they take the hormone out in theory. And so it leaves behind the tissue, which has the nutrients and other pieces and parts that is to help nourish. That's what that's the idea behind what a glandular does, is to help the gland do its job as a nourishing thing. But I will be honest, there are zero scientific studies on glandulars. It's all that I can find. If somebody can find one and send me, that'd be amazing. But I will say I have used glandulars for, I don't even know, 15 plus years with my patients. And I do find them to be quite amazing when I need them. So an adrenal glandular is not a steroid. It is not acting like prednisone. What it does is it's more, let's say, nourishing. And I do find it to be sort of supportive when you're very depleted. So it's like almost stimulatory. And so, yes, an adrenal glandular could be helpful if you were very low cortisol, you've gone off your steroid, and you are really, really struggling. Yes.
All right. That's a good question. That was a good question. I didn't think to ask that.
It's a great question. Yeah, it's a great question. I don't find the blood pressure, potassium things with glandulars. I will say that. Mm. People go, what do you worry about with glandulars? The biggest thing I worry about with adrenal glandulars is that you don't take it late in the day because it could cause insomnia, just like licorice. Licorice can cause insomnia. And it can potentially in some people, because it can be extra nourishing, increase anxiety. Mm. So just like licorice, you've got to be careful that if it could do its job and stimulate you. And if you're low in cortisol, for some people that just brings them back from the dead. And for other people that pushes them into a little bit of anxiety. So you gotta be careful. And again, dose dependent. How many are you taking? Do you take it in the morning? As opposed to, you know, be careful anywhere past lunch. I personally like glandulars. I know practitioners don't, for the reason that it's not, quote, evidence-based. Well, I have 15 plus years of experience with it, and I think that plays into my comfort level. I've done a lot of looking into them, a lot of reading, a lot of experience, a lot of patients who've been on them.
Cool.
I love them as well. No, if you're vegan or vegetarian, sorry.
Yeah, vegan or vegetarian, not going to work.
They are glandulars. Yes. Yeah, that's the other caveat. Sorry.
Or if you have an allergy, like if it comes from a pig or a pig. Cow, mm-hmm. you have to be careful with that.
It is different than dairy allergy. So mm-hmm. I have had people say, I can't do dairy. I'm like, no, this isn't milk. It's glandular. But if you truly do have, you don't do beef, you react around cows. I don't know. Some people know, you know, mm-hmm. like you're allergic to cats, you're allergic to cows. So like maybe don't do that.
Yes. All right. So I have one final kind of question, but it's like a group of questions more so because it has to do with other adaptogenic herbs.
Yes.
So again, I started looking other things up because I mm-hmm. have seen whisperings online that ashwagandha is a natural steroid and that ginseng is a steroid and that rhodiola is a steroid. And, you know, look, to be fair, I can understand a layperson going online and looking up ashwagandha and seeing that it is it contains naturally occurring C28 steroidal lactone triterpenoids. And they see the word steroid in there and they're like, that has steroids. So do these adaptogenic herbs that are commonly used in a lot of different formulas and have been used for centuries? Are they steroids?
It's like liquor. It's not apples to apples by any stretch of the imagination. It's not like if you take ashwagandha, that is cortisol, or that is even a fake cortisol and it's prednisone. Not at all. And it doesn't suppress the brain adrenal axis. In fact, it's the complete opposite. It usually works on the brain and on the adrenal glands, on the immune system and on the neurosystem to harmonize, to communicate, to interact.
So I think what I've heard you say is the steroids suppress the signal between the brain and the adrenals, essentially.
Actual steroids.
Actual
so
steroids.
Even your own. So remember, steroid hormones come from cholesterol and they form into these hormones, cortisol, testosterone, progesterone, estrogen. What we have is we have a feedback loop so that if you have too much, let's say cortisol, if you have too much progesterone, whatever, there is a feedback loop. So the body says, oh, wow, that's a lot. I'm going to slow it down or shut it down. And it does happen in your own body. So if you have a lot of your own natural cortisol, you make it, you're super stressed out. It's a terrible time. Over time, the body goes, whoa, that's a lot. I'm going to shut this down. And your cortisol goes down, down, down. Same thing if you're taking what we call an exogenous cortisol or a steroid, cream, injection, pill, inhaler, it doesn't matter. It comes in your body and it looks enough like cortisol and the body, that feedback loop kicks in and it goes, woo, that's a lot of cream. Mm-hmm. You've been doing it for months now. I'm going to shut this down. And down goes your cortisol. When you take ashwagandha though, that feedback loop it's ashwagandha or rhodiola or eleutherococcus. It doesn't enact the feedback loop because the feedback loop is specific.
That is a really important point. I just wanted to make sure because this was a lengthy and I know kind of nerdy, but it was good nerdy conversation. And I really want to make sure too that we didn't lose people. We're not trying in any way, shape, or form. And you can hear that Carrie loves to break things down and make it understandable for you. We're not trying to lose you guys. We're not trying to say that anyone's fear is irrational because we understand this is traumatic. What you are going through is incredibly traumatic. And I know for practitioners who are listening, who are trying to support people going through this, it's traumatic for everyone. Everyone's just trying to help. We're all trying to figure out how to get you more comfortable. And it becomes like you don't trust your body anymore. You don't trust other things. You become afraid of food. You become afraid of everything in your environment because you feel like you react to everything and then you can't sleep. And it's this awful, awful nightmare.
And I will put insert that caveat. You could have had you can still have reactions to ashwagandha, rhodiola, what have you, but it may not be what you thought it was. You thought you were taking ashwagandha. You had a bad reaction. It must be because it's a steroid. Now I hope you understand the whole feedback loop, steroid hormone, cholesterol. It's not a steroid. Mm-hmm. Ashwagandha is not. But ashwagandha is in the nightshade family. Mm. So if you have a sensitivity to nightshades, that could be the reason you react. And rhodiola can be stimulating and it can be drying. So I've had people say, oh gosh, I took rhodiola and my anxiety got worse and I felt more amped up. And oh, by the way, my eyes are dry. I'm like, oh yeah, rhodiola can do that. and I'm not laughing at them. I'm like, yes. So again, it's not acting as a steroid. It is a known side effect, you know, of a botanical, this one in particular. Others love ashwagandha. Others love rhodiola. So if you've tried any of these things and you're like, well, I didn't like it. My body didn't like it. Very valid. 100%. Mm-hmm. Probably not because it was a quote steroid, because you understand that now. It's probably for other reasons.
Yeah. So I just want to thank you because this has been like lingering questions, especially my clients have had them. I see this online and I have found also too, I do want to mention this, like the Dutch test has been very helpful for clients, especially even if they're not ready to do like a full panel, just the cortisol awakening response for people in this boat can be really helpful to understand how far along they are, how deep they are into this when they start, and are we making any progress? Can you just explain really quickly what that test is, Carrie?
Yes. So the cortisol awakening response, which you alluded to earlier, is it's a natural response we have in the morning when you wake up. And you open your eyes and light comes in, you go from I'm conscious because I have my eyes are open to alert. And that process takes about 20 to 30 minutes. And as in that time frame, your cortisol should go up in a normal, natural fashion. I'm not talking through the roof. I'm talking it just goes up. And then once it's up and you're awake and alert after about 30-ish minutes, it goes down through the rest of the day. So it's your awakening response. Get your butt out of bed. Lower inflammation, you've been fasting all night long, let's support your blood sugar. That's why it goes up, to like protect you. So we test it. The way we test it is through cotton swabs that you suck on like a piece of candy. So you wake up in the morning, as soon as your eyes open up or your alarm goes off, you pop the cotton swab in your mouth, get it wet, stick it back in the tube. 30 minutes later, you grab a different tube, stick that cotton swab in your mouth, get it wet, put it back in the tube. 30 minutes later, so we're going to do 3 collections in 60 minutes. Do the same thing. Pop it in your mouth, get it wet, put it back in the tube. The reason we do 3 collections right away is I'm trying to see how high does your cortisol go up? Does it go down? Does it flatline? Because it's that rapid response first thing in the morning that we need to see. And just as you were saying, Jen, that's what helps you and other practitioners who are working with patients to, like, are you back online? How much more work do we have to do? Is this working or how flatlined are you? And so it's really nice to zoom in right there in the morning. Now, the test continues. The test, you'll do it around dinner and you'll do it around bed because the entire circadian rhythm is very important. We want to see, you know, what's going on at dinner? Why are you tired in the afternoon? Like, what's going on at bed? How come you can't sleep? So we do want to see that cortisol too. Yeah. So that's the cortisol awakening response. And it's nice to know because any kind of treatment you do for the cortisol awakening response is very timed. So if your cortisol doesn't go up in 30 minutes, then whatever your practitioner is going to have you do, generally we do within that first 30 minutes. That's our window. It's like, all right,
yep.
Let's get it up. Let's boost it. Let's have the hurrah in the morning. So let's do something in that 30 minutes, which is really nice.
Yeah. And believe it or not, you can go to DutchTest.com and you can actually order that test yourself. You don't necessarily need a practitioner to order it for you. And you do, I will say this, you do need a practitioner to help you work on it.
Interpret it.
Yeah, they're complicated tests. They're not.
It's comprehensive.
Comprehensive. And there's a lot of times different pieces to this puzzle. And we've talked about several of them in our other episodes, which we'll link to in the show notes. But and you guys have some really great resources as well for practitioners who are looking to learn more about this as well. Because I just want to say that I know that people who are listening to this are not just those going through TSW, not people who are just concerned about steroids. I know for a fact, because I had so many practitioners who reached out to me before this interview were like, I need to hear this. Let me know when it's up because I want to hear what Carrie has to say. So I know that this can be really helpful. And I'm so appreciative that you were willing to come back on the show and do this and share your knowledge to help hopefully provide people a different perspective on what's going on here. That mm-hmm. way they can make an informed decision that they feel comfortable with. So yeah. I just want to thank you Absolutely. So much. So much.
Absolutely. I am so honored that you had me come back on, because you can tell, like, this is what I know.
Yes.
Right? Like steroid physiology, steroid meaning hormone, steroid hormone physiology. I've done a lot of study in to try to get it right, but it's an ever evolving field, and that's what I love about it.
Well, we'll have to have you come back sometime. I'm sure we'll find some other topic, because you always drop a ton of knowledge bombs. And of course, everybody can go to dutchtest.com to learn more. And mm-hmm. yeah, that's where you can find Carrie online at Carrie Jones on Instagram. She's an amazing account, tons of content. You guys will love her, and I love her. She's great. Thank Aww. You so much for Thank being you. Here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope that this interview in its entirety provided you much clarity around a topic that tends to be highly charged. But what I do know is that the things we know now about TSW, for example, are probably not the end-all be-all that we will know in 2 years, in 5 years, in 10 years. And I want to see an evolution of what we know and understand about this process, so we can help people better, right? That's the whole point, is to work towards supporting people who are in this boat. And obviously there's the advocacy to help bring awareness to this happening, to hopefully help people not end up in TSW. But at the end of the day, for those who are, the general consensus from every single person I've ever talked to is there a better way through this? One where I don't feel like I'm losing every aspect of who I am, and something that goes on for years and years and years. And so it's my hope that this interview will be met with open minds and open hearts, and that together other practitioners who listen to this will be also open to collaborating and sharing their information. I'm so deeply grateful for the people who come on the show, like Dr. Carrie Jones and other practitioners that I collaborate with, to continue to evolve my understanding and our collective understanding of how to best support people going through TSW. So now's your turn. I'd love to hear from you, especially if you have a question or comment, or if you'd be interested in taking a look at the research that I made a point to cite in the posts for both of these interviews. You can head on over to skintorrupt.com/204 so that we can keep the conversation going. And remember to share this episode, as well as episode 203, with your TSW friends, anyone you know who's going through this, and even with your practitioner. This is probably information that they may not be aware of, and it could be really helpful for them to look at this whole puzzle, especially the cortisol piece, from a different perspective and help you make the best informed decision for your health journey. And before you head off for your day, take a moment to rate and review the Healthy Skin Show, and then hit the subscribe button. That way, you'll never miss any of the weekly doses of hope, inspiration, research, client stories, tips and strategies that you probably haven't heard before to help you rebuild healthy skin. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.